The rain is expected to diminish and come to an end tomorrow morning, giving way to drier weather for the upcoming weekend. High temperatures today will range from the low 50s in central Iowa to the mid-70s in western Kentucky. Lows tonight will fall into the 40s throughout Illinois. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, cloudy and cooler with a chance of showers, the high 58, with the temperature steady or slowly falling this afternoon. The wind from the north at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, showers are likely and it will be colder. Expect a low of 42. The wind out of the north at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a chance of morning showers. The high 52. The wind will be out of the northwest from 10 to 15 miles per hour. Thursday night, tomorrow night, partly cloudy and colder with a low of 35. The wind will be light and out of the northwest. Friday, mostly sunny. Look for a high in the mid-50s and a light west wind. Friday night, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-30s. Saturday and Saturday night, mostly clear. The high Saturday in the mid-50s, the low Saturday night in the mid-30s. And the outlook for Sunday, partly cloudy with a high in the upper 50s. At noon central time, skies across Illinois and much of Indiana were cloudy. There was some light rain reported in western Illinois, and some locations reported fog. Temperatures ranged from the upper 40s to the low 70s. At Rockford, 48, it was 50 at both O'Hare and at Bloomington, 54 at Mattoon, 64 at Carbondale. At South Bend, fog was reported, 49 degrees there. It was cloudy at Lafayette, 55. Partly sunny at both Indianapolis and Terre Haute. Indianapolis reporting 70 degrees. Terre Haute reported 72. Willard Airport reported 53 degrees at the top of the hour. A cloudy sky with some fog. The dew point, 49. The relative humidity, 86%. The wind out of the north at 14. And the barometric pressure, 29.89, and steady. And the temperature is slowly falling now. We must have reached our high for the day. It is currently 51 degrees on the campus of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. It's 12:39. West Coast, there's a battle shaping up over plans to build a giant new coal export terminal. That's a place where coal gets dropped off and put on ships, in this case, to China. Activists want to stop the terminal from being built. NPR's Richard Harris has this story of the fight in Bellingham, Washington.
If you want to get a sense of what the proposed coal terminal in Bellingham would look like, visit the West Shore Terminal just across the border in British Columbia. Trains a mile and a half long rumble into this port day and night and snake into a large building. There, the trains roll onto a device that tips the coal cars over with the ease of a five-year-old playing with a toy train.
So this is a double dumper, so it unloads two cars at once.
Dennis Horgan is vice president and general manager of West Shore Terminals. Most of the trains haul Canadian coal, but more and more, the trains are arriving from Wyoming and Montana, loaded with coal that will be burned in Asia to make electricity. We follow the coal from the dumping station up to open conveyor belts. Some of it gets piled up in giant stacks, and some gets trundled over to a waiting ship.
This coal is going into a ship called Cape Australia, which has some Chinese characters on it.
It's actually going to Thailand.
We dodge and weave around some construction crews who are upgrading this facility. Right now, coal dust can fly off the open conveyors and blow into the sea.
We've embarked upon a very heavy-duty solution here. It's about a $5 million project to contain any dust that might come off.
Even with decades of open conveyors spreading coal dust, there is surprising marine life just offshore.
You can see all those red buoys out there in the water?
Yeah.
Crab traps.
Ah.
There's a lot of salmon in the water out here. We get, you see orcas going by.
The dusty coal piles also need to be managed so they don't simply burst into flames. Spontaneous combustion.
The best way to deal with spontaneous combustion is either to compact the product or really turn it over quickly. and that's what we try and do.
At the end of our quick driving tour around the artificial island, Horgan asks me to roll up my window so we can drive through the on-site car wash.
Probably it wasn't a smart move to have a white truck and a coal terminal, but the price was right.
And coal dust still clings to the van even after it runs through the washer. Coal is a dirty business, the mining, the handling, and ultimately the burning. And that is all very much on the minds of people 35 miles across the border in Bellingham, Washington.
Beautiful day.
Yeah, it's a good day.
Steve McMinn has come to this lovely waterfront park with his wife, Julie Trimmingham. The park is sandwiched between the shoreline and the railroad tracks that run right through town. Trimmingham's family goes back generations in Bellingham, and now, for the first time, she finds herself stepping up as a community activist, opposing a proposed coal export terminal up the coast at the industrial site of Cherry Point. She's concerned about impacts on the immediate environment of the terminal, but she's also worried about the inevitable increase in train traffic through town.
There would be a train on the tracks at least once every hour, day and night. So there's the noise, there's the pollution, the diesel particulate matter, and emergency vehicle response time. We're not sure how the intensified rail usage will affect businesses who are on the wrong side of the tracks or close to the tracks.
And it just seems like a wrong fit for this progressive college town on sparkling Puget Sound.
It's almost inconceivable that there would be a plan afoot to change this part of the world into a coal export facility. It seems ironic or cruel or misguided at best.
And it's not just about quality of life, it's about the future of the planet. But the reality is there's no other way to engage in global environmental issues like coal exports without focusing on the local impacts. After all, it is perfectly legal to dig up coal, transport it thousands of miles by rail and ship, and burn it for electricity. But climate change is pretty far down on the list of concerns they bring up in their community.
Global warming is an issue that most people aren't very interested in. People are interested in their own lives.
So Steve McMinn knows this is where Think Global, Act Local comes into play.
We both think this, that the rail corridor is the place to stop it.
At the moment, the train line through town is usually a minor inconvenience, a throwback to the days when Bellingham was an industrial town. They actually mined coal nearby and shipped it off to power plants. Mayor Dan Pike meets me at another waterfront park near the tracks. He says he wants to move his city beyond its industrial era. The coal terminal doesn't fit that new image.
There's some folks advocating for it because, like a lot of communities, we really could use some good jobs. But we're also a community that's built a reputation over the last few decades as a place that values sustainability. And there are a few things that are anti-sustainability as clearly as coal is.
These days, the Bellingham waterfront is dotted with sailboat marinas. The city is planning to turn 200 acres of old industrial development into a huge waterfront attraction. Pike says having trains rumble right past is hardly a draw for tourists.
Beyond that, because of our reputation as a place that values sustainability, we've had a lot of businesses in the last few years that choose to locate here because of that reputation. And again, things that damage that reputation damage our economic viability as a community.
Mayor Pike is pitted against labor unions who welcome the construction jobs and the few hundred high-paying jobs that would eventually result at the terminal. Proponents also include Peabody Energy, which would mine the coal for export, Warren Buffett, who owns the railway that would carry the coal, and SSA Marine, which runs ports around the world and wants to build this one. Bob Waters in the Seattle office of SSA Marine says the terminal will be much more environmentally sensitive than the one in British Columbia. For one thing, all the conveyor belts will be covered, and the coal piles will be fenced off from the wind.
We're going to have a buffer of over a half a mile that our storage is even going to be away from the water.
Besides, he says if the locals do block the terminal, which incidentally could also ship other bulk commodities, that wouldn't necessarily stop the train traffic.
It's still going to go on the rail. If it goes to Canada, it's continuing to go in the same rail traffic that it's going now. The question is, will Canada reap the benefits of the jobs and the tax revenues, or if we build our facility and we can get the coal to export through Cherry Point, then Whatcom County can generate the jobs and the tax revenues.
The project is now embarking on a multi-year environmental review and will ultimately be put to a vote of the Whatcom County commissioners. Richard Harris, NPR News.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL. WILL thanks Jack and Marjorie Richmond for their gift of the Richmond Journalism Teaching Studio, adjacent to Campbell Hall for public telecommunication. Consumer Reports has come out with its car reliability survey. Toyota Scion topped the list. Luxury car maker Jaguar was at the bottom. Chrysler was most improved. Sonari Glinton has more.
Okay, here's the Consumer Reports top 10 list. Scion, Lexus, Acura, Mazda, Honda, Toyota, Infiniti, Subaru, Nissan, and Volvo. Not one American car brand.
I think the fortunes have changed for the big three in some ways.
David Champion is head of auto testing for Consumer Reports. That's him unveiling the list in front of a group of car reporters in downtown Detroit.
I've been up here in the past few years saying that Ford has been really doing well over the past 5 or 6 years, really improving the reliability, but unfortunately this year they've dropped significantly.
Last year, that top 10 list of car brands would have included Ford at number 10 out of 28. This year, it fell down to 20. A big reason? Flaws in Ford's new MyTouch system, which essentially integrates all the car's electronics into one flat panel screen. Chrysler made the biggest improvement, jumping up 12 slots. It went from near bottom to near middle, making it Consumer Reports' most reliable American car brand.
Chrysler, I think, is doing well. They just need to maintain that. And as they introduce new models, keep that focus that they have on getting at least average reliability going forward.
Overall, GM brands essentially stayed the same. Champion says this year's list needs to be a wake-up call for the American car industry.
Ford has been doing well in the past. They've got to get back up to where they are. Chrysler and GM, if they're going to succeed, have to be up there with the Japanese manufacturers in terms of reliability.
Meanwhile, each of the Detroit car makers say they take consumer feedback seriously, and they all promise to do better. Sonari Glinton, NPR News, Detroit.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 26th of October, 2011. It's the birthday of the playwright John Arden, born in Barnsley, England, 1930, best known for his play Sergeant Musgrave's Dance. It's the birthday of Hillary Rodham Clinton, born in Chicago, 1947, the daughter of a man who sold draperies and was so frugal that even on the coldest winter nights in Illinois, he would turn the heat in the house off and then wake up early in the morning to warm the house back up before everyone else arose. It was a middle-class suburb, Chicago. The girl played sports. She wrote for the student newspaper, participated in student government. Her father was a Republican. She was, too, campaigned for Barry Goldwater in the 1964